TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Professor Don Huber, an insider's warning on the impact of GMOs and the herbicide Roundup on crops, animals, people, and the environment. The battle lines are drawn over safety of GMOs, genetically modified or engineered plants and animals, between the corporations that make them and farmers and consumers expected to handle and eat them. A revolution in our food supply and in agriculture has taken place in the last 15 years that has remained unknown, secret, or unrecognized, depending on your point of view. However, the efforts to label genetically modified organisms by consumers and the forceful resistance to the right to know what we eat by corporations that make the genetically engineered corn, soy, beets, wheat, etc. that are already in our food, they all have triggered a fundamental question. Why, if corporations whose Roundup-ready corn and soy or BT corn and soy have already replaced all but 10% of all corn and soy grown in the U.S., and why, if they have accomplished this super monopoly over our basic staples by telling farmers and the public how nutritious, safe, and ecologically sound these plantings are, why are they not proud of their product and want to label GMO food as it goes on the market? Genetic engineering is a new technology, and the so-called GMO plants were introduced for unlimited consumption for humans and animals without any independent safety testing. The reason is that in 1992, under George Herbert Walker Bush, GMO plants were declared substantially equivalent or the same as the plants we have known since the beginning of agriculture, and therefore not in need of any special safety testing. The FDA approved GMOs based on the testing done by the corporations who make them. Often against the opposition of some Food and Drug Administration staff, and often without double-checking the corporate test results. There's a growing body of evidence that engineered plants are not safe to eat, not safe for the environment, and are a threat to other plants, soil microbes, etc. Professor Don Huber is Professor Emeritus of Plant Pathology. He taught, researched, and published at Purdue University for 35 years. His areas of expertise are plant physiology, microbiology, pathology, and soil-borne disease control. Huber came out of retirement to speak out on the dangers of genetically modified plants and the herbicide glyphosate that is applied in every planting of Roundup-ready engineered corn and soy. Glyphosate is not biodegradable and can remain as toxin in the soils up to 30 years. So even though Roundup-ready corn and soy are engineered to survive that toxic spray, Huber says that the plant's nutrient content, as well as their immune system and drought resistance, are affected. He presented aerial images taken during the 2012 drought. They show side-by-side cornfields in Iowa with wilted genetically engineered corn on one side and traditional corn that was doing much better right next to it. But first, Huber presented research by the Brazilian weed scientist Zobioli, working with colleagues at the University of Missouri. They showed how the engineering of soybeans decreases their nutrient content in manganese and zinc. That in turn weakens liver function and immunity in animals and humans who eat Roundup-ready soy. Here's Professor Don Huber. I recorded him at the 2nd Annual Heirloom Seed Expo in Santa Rosa, California, in September 2012.
Data here from Dr. Zobioli, working with Dr. Kramer at University of Missouri. You can see just putting the gene in reduced the uptake and efficiency of manganese by 17%. You see an even greater effect, 47% reduction in zinc. Very critical element for us and our animals as far as immunity, liver function. How many people are having increased diseases? Our livers aren't nearly as functional. If you do an ICP analysis, you'll find that almost 100% of our animals in the Midwest now have liver deficiency for manganese, also for vitamin B12, because cobalt is also rapidly immobilized by glyphosate. Then when you apply the glyphosate as that strong chelating agent, immobilizing agent, you see a further reduction in the efficiency of those nutrients. Again, we see a lot of other very similar changes in the Roundup Ready or the genetically engineered plants that we see in normal plants when they're treated with glyphosate. You see lower lignin. That's a structural component. We see less photosynthetic efficiency. That's why we're growing the plant, is to capture that sun's energy. You see less amino acid. The nutritional value of the crops is reduced. One that we saw standing out this year and that was actually reported 30 years ago from just the effect of glyphosate, but has been researched since in the genetically engineered crops, is drought susceptibility. Takes twice as much water to grow a pound of dry matter in a Roundup Ready plant treated with glyphosate than in that same plant without the glyphosate. For my neighbors in Idaho, it costs them $100 an acre to pump the water in just their electricity bill. Takes twice as much with the Roundup Ready. You look at the effects in the Midwest. Roundup Ready versus a conventional or a non-Roundup Ready soybeans with the drought we had. You see the difference. This is one of Howard Bleeger's pictures. His neighbor and his, separated only by a fence. You see that effect of that genetic engineering greatly increasing the drought stress because they have a smaller root system and the physiology relative to those nutrients that are required to maintain drought tolerance have been compromised. You see the effect here on corn. These two fields are separated only by a gravel road, the same soil type. Aerial photographs, 12 bushel versus 120. Yeah, the drought really hurt the normal also, but 100 bushel yield difference. I'd a lot rather have 120 bushel at $8 a bushel than 12 bushel at $8 a bushel. Plus, you look at the quality and the aflatoxin levels that we're seeing in those genetically engineered and the fumonisin and other toxin levels are not fit to eat. They're not the solution to the world's food problems. And we've taken a tremendous loss. Most people don't recognize the symptoms of glyphosate damage. The most common symptom of glyphosate injury isn't death or necrosis, it's bud and fruit abortion. Why are our yields lower? Why is there a yield drag? 50% yield loss in many of the Roundup Ready cotton field. Because the glyphosate affects the hormone system of the plant by chelating those nutrients that are required for auxin production. You lose the lower bowls. All of the other symptoms are symptoms of nutrient deficiency. 8 weeks later, you still see that nutrient deficiency because it takes time for that glyphosate to be immobilized in the soil. It's not as they advertise sometimes, poof, and it's gone. It has to be chelated with the calcium and magnesium and iron, zinc, manganese, cobalt, nickel, and other nutrients in the soil before it's detoxified. Then it can be released. What do you see? Tip-end dieback. Very classical symptom of copper deficiency. curling leaves, streaking of the leaves, graying of the leaves, zinc and manganese deficiency, yellowing of the leaves, magnesium and iron deficiency. We don't recognize that. An agronomist will tell you, well, it was too cold a soil, it was too dry a soil, too wet a soil, too much residue on the surface. They don't recognize the symptoms of glyphosate as a very strong mineral chelator. What happens then with planting? Our label says it's safe to apply glyphosate anytime before the crop emerges. The Israeli label says it's not safe to apply glyphosate for up to 3 weeks after the glyphosate's applied, because it takes time for that chemical to be detoxified or to be chelated. And then you look long term, 10 years after a 1 year glyphosate use as a burn down, not applied to GMO crops. With GMO crops, we have even higher rates of glyphosate applied, so that we see the residual effect. It's a field in Idaho. We pride ourselves on the size of our onions and quality of onions. Can't get bulking on our onions and potatoes like we used to 30 years ago. Farmer went out in the morning, planted his onion seed. It's fairly shallow planted. Went out in the afternoon, followed the label directions, applied his herbicide, his glyphosate. Got halfway across the field, well, his sprayer broke down on him. Took it in the shop, and then it started to sprinkle, and it sprinkled for another 3 days. Afraid to go out and apply his glyphosate to the right half of that field, so it never got the herbicide. 6 weeks later, you could still see where the glyphosate had been applied and where it hadn't. Gray-green, rather than that bright green that you see with a normal onion. Very typical zinc and manganese deficiency. Then you look at the plants. You had the same number of plants. Didn't kill any of them. But you look at the size. You sell onions based on size. 80% loss in marketable onions, even though it was only a 50% or a little less loss in total weight. Dramatic effect. If we're going to compensate for it, we need to recognize that there are things we have to do. First, we have to recognize that we're dealing with two factors. One is the chemical and one is the genetic engineering. Both of them have an impact on all four of those components in this ecology that we're managing and call farming. We need to provide the nutrient availability, increase that level anywhere from 25 to 150% of what we would normally consider sufficient for the crop. We need to detoxify the residual glyphosate in the plant and also in the soil. And then we need to restore the soil microbial activity. So we need to provide those nitrogen-fixing organisms for legumes. They can't survive in the soil any longer in this changed biological environment. Most of all, we need to have a much more judicious use of glyphosate. We can compensate, as you can see here, if we provide those nutrients. We can get back and do just about as well with the GMO as we can with the non-GMO without having to do these other amendments and other supports. Farmers say, well, what's the alternative? I'm hooked on glyphosate. It's the only herbicide that I know. And some of our younger farmers, that's the only one they view. One of our seed companies in Indiana looked at some alternatives. All of these are Roundup Ready hybrids. You can see that just by selecting the herbicide with one of his hybrids, that first one he had a 25% increase in yield by using an alternative herbicide compared with glyphosate. That's his profit. It's not the only alternative he has. Four of them were better than glyphosate. The only two that were poor were the sulfonylureas. They went out at the six-leaf stage. We've always known that that damages the corn crop very severely. They were only about as good as the glyphosate was. There are a lot of alternatives, if we want to do it, that are a lot safer and more effective. More recently, there are a lot of papers and a lot of research that's available on food and feed safety concerns. Increased levels of mycotoxins, our gene flow, our nutrient deficiency, direct toxicity of the residual glyphosate, and the allergic reactions to many of those foreign proteins. We see that increase in toxin level in from the fusarium pathogens, the head blight, dramatically increased when we use glyphosate as an herbicide. Dr. Fernandez has shown that if you've used it once or more in the previous 3 years, there's a significant increase in root rot, in head scab, and in the mycotoxin levels in all parts of the plant. If you've used it every year as a burn down, or quite often they're using it 2 and 3 times in that burn down and process, you're going to have a 300% increase in severity of mycotoxin contamination. If you're following Roundup Ready canola, where more glyphosate's applied, it's even higher. We see that reduction in nutrient value, this Roundup Ready alfalfa compared with normal. Again, third less manganese, only half as much sulfur, 46% reduction in potassium and all the other nutrients. We have a lot of empty calories that we're eating as well as what we're feeding. Dr. Jeffrey Sheffers reported on a 5-year study in February at the Minnesota Veterinary Conference. He said what it all boils down to is manganese deficiency. 100% of the deformed calves and stillborn calves are manganese deficient. To his surprise, 63% of the normal ones, when they analyzed the livers, were also extremely deficient. Then he looked at the feed and he said, "My word, what's happened?" Goes from 0.01 up to levels that we used to consider just normal sufficiency range. Only the best ones were still in the normal sufficiency range. He didn't sort out the GMO from the non-GMO. There's a big difference between them. You wonder how those plants down in that lower end even survived. Some of those, even at the mean level, 15 parts per million is well below that 50 to 200 parts per million required for corn. That's what we're feeding. And then we wonder why our swine and dairy and cattle producers are going out of business because of high disease levels and high mortality. Iowa State University Veterinary Large Animal Veterinary Clinic 2 years ago started analyzing all of their necropsy animals for manganese. They're all deficient. We're not giving them any of those minerals to keep those enzymes functional in the liver that give us immunity to many of these diseases. The drugs can't do it. The drugs can only support the basic system in the animal or in us. In 2002, the United Stock Growers Association gave testimony before the Senate Ag Committee of 2 conditions that were threatening the viability of the industry. One of them was premature aging. You take a prime animal to market, 2 year old, and it's graded down as though it was a colt coming out of a dairy at 16 years old. The other one was loss of pregnancy, infertility, reproductive failure, as high as 40 to 50% of the cattle pregnancies were being lost. A study 3 or 4 years ago in Iowa looked at GMO versus non-GMO cattle feed. You look at those animals that have been fed the non-GMO, you have that bright tallow on the stomach lining, white there. Look at those that have been fed the GMO feed. It's all yellow. all shows a very severe allergy reaction. Looks like an old cow. Doesn't look like a prime beef.
You are listening to Professor Don Huber speaking on the impact of GMOs and the herbicide Roundup. He is Professor Emeritus of Plant Pathology at Purdue University. Recorded at the Heirloom Seed Expo in Santa Rosa, California, in September 2012. Next, Huber brings up the 2002 discovery of a new organism that is associated with reproductive failure in farm animals. The FDA was alerted, but to this day, no scientific studies have been initiated to identify this organism. Even though the problem of reproductive failure persists, as well as the suspicion that GMO animal feed may play a role. Huber then follows up with a number of diseases, human and animal, that are increasing in incidence and epidemiologically follow a similar curve as the introduction and rapid spread of GMO foods beginning in 1996. Professor Don Huber.
In 2002, a new organism or a new entity was identified that causes reproductive failure. This entity is about the size of a small virus, not a virus. Initially had the name of a microfungus just because that's the way it looked under the electron microscope. It has been well documented. It's a self-replicating entity so that it can grow in a plant, can grow in culture for a short period of time or for a long period of time if we have a higher organism to grow it with. Been isolated from aborted tissue, miscarried tissue, purified, grown up, reintroduced into the animal, and all of the symptoms are reproduced. Koch postulate has been well established. In a chicken embryo, or in introducing it into a fertilized chicken egg, it'll kill the embryo in 24 to 48 hours. Causes infertility in cattle, horses, sheep, pigs, goats, chickens, and man. Article in November, Hordes Dairyman, two veterinarians, looking at infertility problems from across North America. The title of it's, why are so many cows losing pregnancies? Losing up to 20% of pregnancies isn't acceptable. What they're showing is 28, 27, 30% of pregnancies lost. And as the stock growers reported, 40 to 50%. We've had one dairy lost 70% of their confirmed pregnancy animals. You're not going to stay in a dairy very long if you can't have a calf. You look at the other data and you say, what's changed? What's happened? And we had our dairy in Idaho, 1.2 inseminations was normal. If we went above that, we knew something was really wrong. I had a bull breeder in Nebraska sit beside me on the plane, said he's had to pull 40% of his bulls out of service. Can't get conception anymore. He can't figure out what the problem is. Most of the veterinarians aren't aware of this new entity. Every time we have a check, that's what we find. There are a lot of other problems and concerns. We're just seeing the tip of the iceberg on the health problems. There's always a 4 to 10 or 15 year delay in finally putting the medical records together. This is the data on celiac disease in children in Alberta. High glyphosate using area for a Roundup Ready canola. It tracks very nicely the same track that you would see with the adoption of Roundup Ready canola. All of the inflammatory type diseases, Parkinson's disease, celiac, chronic fatigue, colitis, Crohn's, chronic diarrhea, all of these diseases have the same track, follow the same line epidemiologically that we see with the adoption of our Roundup Ready crops. Data from Howard Vlieger 3 years ago had a study with pigs. Pig stomach looks very much like ours. What you have is GMO on the right, all inflamed and irritated, that very intense allergy response. The normal on the left. What do we do when our children can't handle breast milk or cow's milk? We put them on soybeans. 98% is GMO. How are you going to help your child? And then when you see that those genes can be picked up from the soybean in the digestive tract, picked up by the organisms there and then start producing that allergen so that you can't get away from it. Not a matter of quitting eating strawberries or peanuts or soybeans, because you then become your own allergen. So I think that we can very well anticipate that future historians may well look back and write about our time, not about how many pounds of pesticide we did or didn't apply, but about how willing we are to sacrifice our children and jeopardize future generations with this massive experiment we call genetic engineering, that's based on false promises and flawed science just to benefit the bottom line of a commercial enterprise. I appreciate the opportunity of sharing this with you.
That was the conclusion of a one-hour talk by Professor Don Huber on the impact of GMOs and the herbicide Roundup on crops, animals, people, and the environment. He's Professor Emeritus of Plant Pathology at Purdue University. I recorded him at the second annual Heirloom Seed Expo in Santa Rosa, California, in September 2012. Don Huber is one of the rare, courageous voices from mainstream science who dare speak out on the topic of genetic engineering. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs. Please have a pen handy to write down a phone number to call to find out how to order the one-hour speech by Don Huber as audio CD or as film on DVD that includes his scientific slides and charts. You can get information on how to order a CD or DVD with Don Huber by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order. You can get your CD by mail or credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. You can also subscribe to weekly podcasts. My name is Maria Glurden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.